Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. It is the 21st of August, 2013, here in the land of the rising sun. And our guest today will need no introduction to my regular listeners. He is, of course, Jack Blood of DeadlineLive.info. And this is the point at which I would usually tell you about the Jack Blood show on the No Agenda Global radio stream, but that is no more. In fact, it is now transmogrified into a podcast. So, Jack, great to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about your new podcast.
Transmogrified. I have to steal that word. That's the name of the new show. Well, we're doing podcasts like you are, James. It's come time. I want to keep up with new media. We want to keep upping our game and setting the bar really high for everyone else. So live radio, while it's important and it's a great function because you can get out there and correct the propaganda as it's happening, and people can, you know, that day take your version of the official story and talk to their people about it. So I really love doing it. It's a great function. Of course, it's massively time consuming to fill all those hours. And just like you, we've gone the quality over quantity route, and we're just posting weekly podcasts at deadlinelive.info.
Excellent. Well, I hope people will check it out. And you've already had a couple of episodes. Who have you had on so far?
Okay. I had Tom Hansen on, and a lot of people don't know who he is, but I've known the guy for years. He is a street writer, and he's written a new book called This Is What We Do. I highly recommend it. It's a novel. It's fiction, allegedly. And it's a lot about a leaderless revolution. The people can't take it anymore. The world is cracking at the seams, and people begin fighting back, not against each other like we do now. Which side of the fence are you on? Are you a blue tie or a red tie guy? are you for Trayvon Martin or George Zimmerman, right? But this is people actually taking it out on the people that have put us into this position. And it's very graphic, and there is some violence in it. But he's a great writer and a great artist in general. So we had him on last week and did a little post-election news in the first show. I think there's a myth out there that Mitt Romney lost the 2012 election to Barack Obama because, and it is a good point to make, that the Obama administration has supercomputers that they are able to mine data from all of us. You know, they get into our Facebook. Maybe you got some of the letters from Michelle and Barack Obama during the election. I certainly never signed up for them. Somehow I ended up on their list. And so this new high-tech way of mining voters is definitely a good story, and we did do that story with Jerry Corsi. But I also want to remind people that the election was entirely fixed. In fact, we saw more election fraud in the 2012 election, just in the campaign for the Republican nomination here for president, than any other time, and it almost went unnoticed. So that was part of the story as well. We did that. And I'm hoping to have you on and a bunch of my news friends in the third edition installation of the Jack Blood Show podcast, James. And I'm really liking to mix kind of artists and people who are outside the fold of kind of the general crowd that you always hear from. So we're doing, you know, hard news and parapolitics, and then we're doing something a little more creative in the show as well.
Well, I love that, and I've heard you mention Tom Hansen's novel a couple of times now, so I think I'm going to have to bite the bullet and read it. It sounds fascinating, so it sounds good. And no surprise, unfortunately, that the Republican vote tampering didn't get to any player coverage from the people who are constantly talking about the vote tampering when it affects Democrats. And yeah. I don't think we need to promote those people any more than have been.
You know, I think then there was some talk about it on MSNBC, General Electric, Comcast. Let's remember who owns them. and people like Rachel Maddow were pointing it out just to show how despicable and how low and how dirty the Republicans play. But look, I mean, that works both ways. So there was some reporting on it, and Brad Friedman and others had made mention of it. These are people that cover, and let's remember, it's election fraud and not voter fraud. The voters aren't defrauding anybody here. It's the system to pick the candidates for you. We also have to bring that up into 2016, James, the road to Jeb Bush. Again, a Bush and a Clinton. Clintons and Bushes, Bushes and Clintons going into 2016. And I have a sneaking feeling that Americans aren't going to sit and take it.
Well, that remains to be seen. And perhaps that's up to us to help get people on board, at least make people aware of what's happening. All right, well, let's get into some of the news that's happening and get your take on it. I know that right now you have up posted on Deadline Live an article, Revenge Tactics, UK Detains Greenwald's Partner Under Terrorism Act, Confiscates Electronics. And this is referring to the story of David Miranda, Glenn Greenwald's partner, lover, whatever, who was transiting through the UK on his way back to Rio de Janeiro from Berlin, where he was visiting Laura Poitras, who is the other journalist who's been reporting the Snowden story. And lo and behold, he gets detained for several hours. I want to get your take on what the UK government hoped to accomplish with this move and what it actually will accomplish.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a threat. They want to punish people who are publishing things that are not acceptable within the establishment. Look, I mean, we know the accredited media is completely phony and fixed. In fact, we also have a story that Mother Jones took one of their reporters or another reporter to the woodshed because they dared to not believe the official story by the Los Angeles Police Department regarding the Michael Hastings. Well, let's just call it an assassination. I know you've got some news on that. So right now, I think that the mainstream media, if you want to call them that, the establishment, the accredited media, quote unquote, are coming apart at the seams themselves. And they're trying very hard to keep the leaks to a minimum. But somebody out there wanted Greenwald punished. And this is just a way to do it. You remember what they used to do to John Lennon? They threatened to deport him for like 20 years because they didn't like the effect he was having on the youth. And they didn't like some of the things he was saying. If he was a nice stiff upper lip Englishman who was a banker and didn't cause anybody any problem, then obviously that wouldn't have been, you know, hung over his head all those years. So I think this is similar to Greenwald. Now, did you see the reaction to this? He is now saying because of this, he's going to publish many secrets that he was sitting on and using to protect himself. So they've called his bluff and he's ready to call theirs.
Well, I think that was a bit of misreporting. I know Huffington Post and some other outlets picked it up with a kind of sensational headline, "They will be sorry for this," or something like that. But if you go and actually read Glenn Greenwald's comments, basically he was just saying, "I'm going to continue doing my job." So I think that's been a bit blown up out of this. But again, what kind of reaction would they expect from this? I mean, it's so bizarre. It's almost as if they're trying to provoke a reaction here.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then the whole thing could just be a giant smokescreen. I've considered that when you know that one of the things that I think we have to remind people of, you know, when we're talking about Booz Allen Hamilton, right, the contractor that was working for the NSA, that is a Carlyle Group company. So not that I would give Booz Allen Hamilton any credit on their own, but knowing that the Carlyle Group is mixed up in this, it just always makes me a little bit sketchy. The fact that, as we talked about on your show in the past, James, that these Binnings and Tice and these credible whistleblowers came out saying, I think, far more substantial things than Snowden had said, and that they weren't really, they weren't really getting any action in the media, does also make me a little bit nervous. The fact that this whole thing has been all-consuming, in a way, has taken us off the course for a lot of the things we were on top of and were following. And what do the elites want us to know? They can listen to us. They can get to us all at any time. I don't know how much of that's true, James, but I think they don't mind us thinking that. I think that works in their favor. So all of this, whether Glenn Greenwald is somehow not to be trusted, I don't know. He could just be caught up in it. I've always thought he did a pretty good job standing up to people. Whether Snowden is authentic, I mean, a year before that, he was threatening whistleblowers and saying they should be punished for treason. All of it is just a little bit weird, a little bit sketchy to me. And so I don't put all my eggs in that basket.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that, and it is a shame that, unfortunately, a lot of the other NSA whistleblowers have been swept under the rug. Although it was heartening to see that Russ Tice and William Binney were interviewed on PBS and got some of their information out, and unfortunately, that didn't create any waves whatsoever, but still, at least it got a little bit
of... The Binney story was huge when it came out a few years ago. I mean, that's something we all covered, though the mainstream media really didn't cover it too much. And I don't know. I mean, can they benefit from us knowing that? Are we afraid? Are you afraid to type things on your computer now? Are you afraid to have conversations? You do a show like this, James, so I don't imagine you are. But but I think the average person is. And look at the debate and the discussion. It's nice that we're having a debate on this. This is what I've always said. It's a great debate to have. Do we want them watching us all the time? It's at least now they kind of admit it, though. What are we listening to? The Obama administration? There's no evidence that any of this is even happening. It's not even happening. That's their defense, is you're imagining it all. You must have seen that on the internet or something. But when I see the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats, in this case the White House, both agreeing that this is necessary, that this is a necessary tool. You know, stop and frisk was a big story because in New York, a Supreme Court judge, I believe, had ruled that the stop and frisk policy of New York City was unconstitutional. They have vowed to repeal it, in fact, they're going a step further for public housing, James. They're getting DNA and fingerprints from everybody. And it's hard to find anyone in the establishment that disagrees with any of this. So here's the debate. Finally, we're having a debate. But really, those of us that think that the NSA might be doing something nefarious, I guess we're just paranoid kooks still. And this flies in the face of everything we know since the Patriot Act has been instituted. And that's all part and parcel of this, right? Everything changed since 9/11. What have we seen? 90% of the time, these are public figures, folks. These are facts. 90% of the time, the Patriot Act was used for crime and usually for drug crimes to supersede, just cause and the Constitution to go kicking in doors and going on fishing expeditions. So they've been filling our jails with people, thanks to the Patriot Act, that have absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. Of course, meanwhile, what are we doing supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria or in Africa? So, I mean, these are guys to talk. But I'm hoping that all of this is adding up on the average conscience, that the people are saying, look, I don't care if I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't want this. I don't trust you, and I'm not going to allow you to continue doing it. And this is how we see things like the Amash vote to defund the NSA here a few weeks ago almost passed. So I think the climate is certainly changing. But once again, the establishment seems to agree with itself, no matter what color tie they have on.
Unfortunately so. Well, for people who want more information about that fingerprinting scheme for public housing in New York City that you mentioned, it is up on your site under the police state section. You have an article, NYC, Bloomberg's idea to fingerprint 620,000 people in public housing stuns and infuriates residents, as it should. But yeah. Unfortunately, those are the types of headlines that generally become, well, and it was passed, and now everyone does it.
I'd rather be homeless, James. You see, this is what we get in... And the old adage here is, beware of the man from the government who says, I'm here to help you. Well, this is now what happens. If you want any food, we're not allowed to feed the homeless here. It's against the law in most cities, right? It's a public health nuisance or something. We, of course, went out and illegally fed the homeless many, many times. And it's quite gratifying, and I hope everyone does it. But to get food, food stamps, assistance, public housing, any of this, you've got to put yourself into the system and give up so many of your rights. And I just don't see that as a viable solution. Do you?
Thank you for the softball question. No, I don't. But of all of the civil disobedience that I could possibly think of, feeding the homeless has got to be the absolute best bit of civil disobedience that could possibly be out there. So I hope more people are doing that. And the idea that they could try to prevent people from doing that is infuriating in and of itself.
People are very generous. You know,
people are naturally generous. That's exactly right.
When we lived in Austin, Texas, they'd have, you know, Toys for Tots or something every Christmas presents for the kids, for the homeless kids, for poor kids, and they would always end up with a surplus. So when people are tasked to do this themselves and not just tithe 50% of their taxes to the extortion racket here, think of all the red tape and the bureaucracy and everything that goes into getting one can of food or something or one toy to a kid, they don't really feel like giving as much or doing as much. But when they get to do it themselves and get to really see what a change that they are making, it really does a lot for people and it makes the world a better place. So, you know, pay it forward, as everyone says.
Well, that's well put, and I agree with that completely, and that I think goes in line with my most recent podcast episode talking about what's possible when we get the government out of the picture and allow people to interact as human beings. Imagine that. All right, I want to turn to a story that may have flown under the radar, but I think is interesting, and I'd like to get your take on it. Again, this is up on deadlinelive.info. Police passed new information Princess Diana killed by member of British military. And I guess this is coming from some sort of court trial that's ongoing, and apparently some new information about special forces involved in Princess Di's death. Tell us a little bit about this story and what's going on here.
Okay, well, a lot of people are calling this a ho-hum, and I can't blame them. It's kind of under one of those things that we already knew about, and I think that maybe this could be going to some kind of an official investigation to stop any of the speculation about these quote-unquote conspiracy theories about what happened to Diana. But you just saw recently the little lizard child was born. I mean, the little prince was born in... with all fangs and claws, born, I kid the royals, in England. And wow, when I saw that, you know, something like 80 to 90% of the citizens there love their royals more than ever before, I thought back to Princess Diana and how she had really done some serious damage to the royal family, and that people had loved her so much. And I think that most people, kind of like the JFK assassination here, they just kind of assume that that's what happened. But now, supposedly, there is information which is coming from, I guess, would be something of a whistleblower. And this was given to the police by former parents-in-law of this former soldier. And it concerns the death of Diana. And it could link, I think, directly. Now, that's, again, if we're doing an authentic and a truthful investigation here, probably not going to happen. And most likely this information will either be distorted or covered up. Might even, the whole thing might even just be, again, another snow job. But I don't know. I mean, this is a weird time for this to come out, don't you think? I mean, they've just had the royal baby, and the people love the royals more than ever before. And now this comes out. It looks to me as if they're trying to shore up any possibility that someone might not like the royals. And that's just me being skeptical. So we'll have to see the exact information and what's coming out. But it's interesting that it's even out there as news, personally, and that's why we posted it.
It is interesting. And one of the interesting aspects of this, I just saw this on Twitter, so take that for what it's worth. But someone on Twitter was claiming, at any rate, that UK slang, in UK slang, murked means being killed in a, you know, spectacular car crash, as in the Mercedes that she was being driven in that night. And lo and behold, of course, we had another person who was murked quite recently on the streets of Los Angeles, of course, talking about Michael Hastings. So another strange point of resonance for this story,
sure.
I guess.
Well, and you know, you look at the circumstances around the Diana death, Dodi Fayed and Diana, their driver, the car, and the fact that all the cameras went out just as they were driving into the Point d'Alma tunnel, which used to be an old worship point to worship the goddess Diana. I mean, some of that stuff is really weird that they hit, I think it was the 13th pole, right? That there wasn't any kind of record whatsoever of what happened there, that there didn't seem to be any witnesses, and that nobody was held accountable for this. And of course, what did they do? And this is going to, I guess, could leak into what you're going to be talking about with Michael Hastings. The driver was drunk. It was drunk driving. That's all it was. And we just need to kind of go back to sleep on this. There have been some allegations that she was alive and they finished the job. So this has all the hallmarks of a MI6 or even something bigger in global superintelligence. And look who benefits, right, from Diana. But we see a lot of similarities with Michael Hastings.
We certainly do. And just before leaving the Diana story, I believe the latest information is saying that this was a British military special forces operation. So
right.
Who knows?
Yeah, that's all we kind of know now. Yeah. And again, the timing I thought was rather interesting.
Indeed. Well, speaking of the timing, speaking of the Hastings case, this has just come out here, so I haven't had a chance to go over it thoroughly, but apparently Michael Hastings' coroner report has been released, and apparently it shows that there was marijuana and meth in his system, although they say that was not a factor in the crash itself, i.e. he was not intoxicated when he actually crashed, but apparently it was in his system. And the LA Times is reporting some mysterious new witness who's come forward, apparently, and was claiming that that Hastings was passed out between 12:30 and 1 a.m., although I don't know where he was at that time or any of the details on this. Again, this is just breaking. So it's a fresh, hot off the press, so we don't have all the details. But first thoughts on hearing some of this information and what this might mean for where this story goes from here.
Shouldn't surprise any of us. And the chain of command of evidence being lorded over by the LAPD doesn't make us very comfortable, I think. And I doubt there's really any kind of transparency here They have been caught in the past, even rigging autopsies at the L.A. County Coroner's Office, where some pretty high-placed people sit. So I can't trust it. Does anybody trust it? Does this end? They've actually ruled out foul play even before the autopsy came through. Does it make sense? How does being intoxicated, drunk, or sleepy take a Mercedes-Benz engine and throw it, what was it, 100 feet away? I'm sorry. I have a hard time believing that. It's like watching Building 7 fall from the World Trade Center on 9/11 and wasn't hit by a plane, and having, you know, them tell you years later from NIST that it was office fires that brought it down. It doesn't matter how many times they justify their excuses. It still doesn't add up. And it doesn't add up through physics, doesn't add up through common sense, and just doesn't add up, period. Now, people that have been reporting on this have been getting slapped pretty good. In fact, we've got a story about Mother Jones going after reporter Kim Dvorak, trying to exercise her free speech, right, by investigating this. She's not even coming to any conclusions. She's investigating it, and she's called by Mother Jones an effing disgrace. They're coming down pretty hard on her, I assume, and I've heard that Rolling Stone is doing an article on it regarding the role of Mr. Brennan in all of this. But look, it's the LAPD, right? The idea that they could be any kind of fountain of transparency on Hastings' death, you know, it's more ridiculous than some of the conspiracy theories that might be attached to it. So it's tough, isn't it? When we want to get to the bottom of something like this, and the LAPD and the powers that be have custody of the chain of evidence, it's very difficult for us. We have to just use what we can use. And here's a guy that a lot of people wanted dead for a lot of reasons. And, you know, we can speculate on those. But it's like Gary Webb. He was suicidal, right? From Dark Alliance. James Hatfield, who wrote Fortunate Son, a long story there. But another guy who was suicidal. And then recently, Aaron Schwartz. Some of his documents have just come out that he was suicidal, too. All of these people challenging the powers that be, and all of them dying in somewhat suspicious ways. I think that the lesson we learn from this, and this goes into this recent Barnaby Jack case, which is a really interesting case about being able to hack into your pacemaker. By the way, we'd like to have the codes to Dick Cheney's pacemaker, please. Anytime you feel like shooting those over to us, we'll use them for peaceful purposes, we promise. There'll be a lot more peace when Dick Cheney's gone. And I didn't mean that the way it sounds. Well, okay, I did. But, you know, that is really freaky when we think that any of us that could have any kind of a medical device in us, any of us that could be anywhere near anything that is computerized, could be victims of some kind of cyber hacking. And we saw later that even Forbes magazine did you see that? They did an expose. They had two guys with a laptop sitting in the back of a car, controlling the car completely from the back seat with a laptop, a car that they had no inside information on. So that's how easy it was. It's not even hard to do. And considering the fact that Richard Clark even spit that out, I think that's where we have to look. They have motive. They have opportunity. They benefited.
That's about how it adds up to me. And the way they're going after Kimberly Dvorak is pretty disgusting. But then again, his wife came out on Piers Morgan, no less, and claimed it was all just a big accident. So case closed.
The family always do that. And I believe they're threatened with either cash payments, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to get the insurance money. We'll tie this thing up forever and ever. We're going to smear his name, and we're going to take you down with it. You can just imagine what these people might have to hear sitting in a room with, you know, these guys in suits and sunglasses. So, and maybe that sounds a little too Men in Black for people, but that's how it works. You know, we've caught them doing that many times. I think probably what we'll find here in a couple of years is that there was a massive cover-up in the Michael Hastings death, and oh well, we don't do that anymore. You know, those guys are gone now, and a new administration is in office, and we're sorry that might have happened, and now it won't happen ever again. I mean, that's normally how it works out, right?
Yeah. Now you can trust the LAPD. Well, on that exact note, it is interesting how admissions can come out years or even decades later, and now suddenly everything's cleared up, and now we can believe the truth. And I'm referring to a couple of stories that are posted up on Deadline Live right now, which I think are kind of go together in a weird way. One of them, Area 51 officially acknowledged and mapped in newly released documents. And the other, CIA finally admits it masterminded Iran's 1953 coup. So both of these stories are things that we've already known for a long, long time. But it's almost as if now the government is saying, look, now that we admit it to you, now you can believe it. Now it's official. And I think that's a pretty interesting and telling part of the psychology of these people who believe that they control reality.
It's transparent. Well, I guess do we get called kooks now when we talk about Operation Ajax in 1953 in Iran? Do we? I mean, I read Stephen Kinzer's book, which I thought was phenomenal. All the Shah's Men tells the whole story. Nothing is missing in there. I doubt that we're going to learn anything new. Suitcases full of cash, going and controlling the media, controlling crowds, going into the street. Calling Mossadegh a communist, or in today's lingo, a terrorist, right? There is no difference between the overthrows in anywhere, in Guatemala, in all the attempted overthrows in Cuba, in Central and South America, Northern Africa, and what's going on now in Syria, what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, potentially, certainly what happened in Libya, what's going on now in Egypt, which is just a huge, massive, colossal mess. And what went on and around in 1953. This was the Dulles brothers with their first major high-tech coup. And I think everything since has followed the playbook. So they admit they did this, James, but are they going to admit all the other ones they did? A lot of the same names keep turning up.
That's exactly right. And I'm not holding my breath for the official admissions. But again, it's kind of bizarre that they think that that we didn't already know this, or it's not official until they say it. I mean, it's just speaks to their psychology, I think.
I don't even think people look too much at it. We posted it just because we've got to record some things as their news. Same thing with Area 51. I mean, what did they tell us? They were doing extreme war testing over there. So, you know, spy planes and whatnot. I mean, does that surprise anybody? Again, we already knew that. Is that even information that we could use today? Other than the fact that we're kind of sick of spending all of our money on these little toys, these space weapon toys or whatnot. But it doesn't really help us. But it does show that they're being transparent. And again, the constant story you hear is we don't do that anymore. We're very nice. Now all we're doing is helping the poor people of Syria, the poor people of Libya, the poor people of Egypt. That's all we're doing, though we don't help the poor people of Saudi Arabia, name any other, you know, fill in the blank of our oil friends. And that they don't, doesn't matter what they do to their people, apparently.
Bahrain? What's Bahrain? Exactly. All right. Well, I've been kind of directing things here, but are there any other stories that you'd like to talk about before we let you go today?
Well, I want to say on that implantable, this again, here is a really weird story. Barnaby Jack, you know, the celebrated hacker who had infiltrated and implanted medical devices and ATMs, was found dead just before the giant hacker convention. And, what was he, like 30 years old? And this is even looked at with suspicion on the major networks. But this story has been really getting out and coming up of being able to hack into people's implantable medical devices. Obviously, the medical industry doesn't like this very much, although maybe they'll make a lot of money replacing that. What's amazing to me is that they'll sit there with a straight face and tell you that it's not possible, that we don't know if it's even possible. And yet here was a guy that was about to prove it and never got the chance to do so. I have to think that, you know, this push button assassin thing that they've got going now has really worked. I wonder how many people have died out there through these kinds of things. Now you want to know, how many people got the cancer virus, the pre-engineered laboratory cancer virus, or the lab-engineered AIDS, or whatever virus that weirdos like Sidney Gottlieb were working at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Now they get to do it just electronically. And how much longer is it going to be before we see people zapped from space with a space laser? We've already got these drones running around everywhere. Public assassination. It's okay. We do it. One of the stories we covered is they had convinced or cajoled or tortured or whatever an 8-year-old to put a homing device on his own father, who was then subsequently killed by a drone strike. The child himself later killed. I mean, we're using 8-year-old children now to fight the war on terror. Is any of this moral? Is this represent anything that you, the good people of this world, stand for? When are you going to stand against it? So Now, I guess that's my little piece. And high-tech murder is, I guess it's scary. We should be paranoid about it. But I just want to point it out. I just don't want to get to a point where we don't acknowledge that it's happening.
Speaking of Jack Ruby, I guess we're coming up to the 50th anniversary of JFK. So perhaps we can cover some more of that next time. But you're exactly right. These types of technologies have existed for a while, but they're only getting more and more refined.
HP, well, and this kind of segues into the JFK and Fort Detrick and all of the exotic weapons and various coups and assassination squads going right into JFK. You know, a lot of that stuff back from the 60s all melts in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. A lot of the same names like E. Howard Hahn and Frank Morales and a lot of these guys, Frank Sturgis. And H.P. Abarelli has written an amazing book called A Secret Order, and it's not just another JFK book. You're going to learn a lot by reading that book about how things work, and to think that they don't work like that anymore would be being quite naive. So you definitely need to get Hank on your show, and I should remind people that if you are, you know, the kind of person that plans ahead for a long ways, November 22nd here in the United States, there's going to be massive protest at every major Federal Reserve station, one here in Atlanta, Georgia. So I guess giving credit where credit is due, protesting the Federal Reserve on the death assassination of JFK 50 years. It'll be their 100th year anniversary to their charter, and definitely something we want to try to reverse.
Interesting. And it's at this point that I'll remind listeners that in my archives, I have an interview with the man who wrote the book on the Federal Reserve, G. Edward Griffin, who does not believe that the Federal Reserve had anything to do with JFK or that JFK was fighting the Federal Reserve. Anyway, we'll explore that in some more detail as we approach the anniversary. But on that note, let's leave things there. Once again, Jack Blood is at deadlinelive.info, and that's where you can go to subscribe to his brand new podcast. And I believe I will be making an appearance on that very shortly. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
No subscription necessary right now. You just go listen to it. Donate to us on the honor system. James, I don't mind telling you, I just lost a huge job. And, you know, our family is really, you know, things are just really tight for us. I'm looking at the future very optimistically. There's a lot of things we are going to do and want to do. This is a real rough patch. So if anybody's been holding out and waiting to donate to our work, and we've got 12 years every day of it out there, please do so now. It would be very important. You can just write us at jackblood@hotmail.com and either send direct electronic payments there or write us, and we'll give you an address. But really important to vote with your dollars, whether you're voting for Tom Hansen and his book, This Is What We Do, whether you're voting for James Corbett or your old pal Jack Blood. You know, keep the things that you like that are unique and different and striving to constantly get better. Keep them going. And we definitely need your help now more than ever. So thanks, James, for letting me say that.
Well, no problem, and let me just reiterate that so you get what you pay for, and if you don't pay for the alternative media, it will go away, so hopefully people will take that to heart. Once again, there is a big donate button, helpful donate button on the front of deadlinelive.info as well, so I hope people will look into that. All right, Jack Blood, let's leave things there.
Yeah, you're the man. Always great to hear from you, James. Honor to be on your show, and we'll talk to you real soon. And people look for him on my show, because then I really grill him. He really gets it when he comes on my show, and I make him squirm a little bit, and it's really fun.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to it, I guess. All right. Talk to you soon.
Stay bold, brother.